Water.
Earth.
Fire.
Air.
Welcome to Bending the Elements.
A production by the Novice Elitist Podcast.
With your hosts, Caleb and Isaac.
Podcast about all things Avatar.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, those between and affiliated to Bending the Elements, an Avatar podcast, here with your hosts Caleb and Isaac. And today we are going to be talking about, once again, episode 3 of Netflix's Avatar The Last Airbender. And this one is Omashu. And Caleb, who wrote and directed this episode?
Well, this one was directed by someone that I've never heard of before, Jabbar Rahsaani. It looks like he's a pretty experienced like visual effects supervisor, and maybe, you know, not typically a director. So trying some different things. But I did see that he worked previously on that, I guess not Forsaken, but Sharkboy and Lava Girl and the Spy Kids. And I'll admit there was times like this when I actually did think of The Spy Kids 3, and yeah, I'll explain that a little bit as we go along. So
wow.
When I saw that in his visual effects thing, I was like, oh wow, that's what a coincidence that I was actually thinking of that when watching this. So
quite the credentials there, eh?
And it was written by, again, someone that I've never heard of, Christine Boylan. It looks like she's been doing a lot of TV stuff, even working with Netflix a little bit. So there you go. And the aforementioned Once Upon a Time. It looks like she did a little bit of work for them, too. But there you go. That's all I got for that.
Fair enough. Well, Caleb, I guess, what were your best things and your worst things? And, how are you feeling about this episode?
This one, I'm not too sure. If I'm still in the middle, kind of neutral section with this show, this one I inch back more to the neutral. I'm not sure why. I don't think this was necessarily a poor episode. But there were some things that I'll highlight as things that I did like, but I don't know, it felt a little bit busy, this one. For my best thing, I think I would have to go with just Teo and the Mechanist, just liking the energy those two are bringing to the screen. I feel like it was a good choice of casting, and I think that there was quite a bit of charm there. For my worst thing, this feels mean to say, but just the way that they, and I can't, this is hard for me to say too, because I'm not exactly sure to say it. Because when we first see the city of Omashu, I think that they captured a good, like, epic quality to it. It looks like a cool city. But then once we're kind of walking through the streets, I just could not help thinking of the Star Wars prequels. I was thinking of Attack of the Clones, where I was just like, oh wow, yeah, these people are just not there. And that's why I was also thinking of Spy Kids, that one when they're in like a video game world, where I was just like, yeah, this is another one of those things where just these people are clearly not in those environments, and I just find it very off-putting. So I don't know, maybe that's an unfair thing to list my worst thing. I'm sure their budget for special effects was already very taxed, but I just wish that they were using more sets. I don't know what to say with it, but I wish that very much so.
No, that's fair. That's fair. I think, yeah, again, I don't want to bring in the neutral, because I definitely feel that with this, but it's not in a negative way. Like, there was nothing that really, like, was eye-gouging for me this episode. Like, you know, Kyoshi's speech last episode and her not being able to back up her statements.
Yeah, we're sorry, everybody, if we are a little bit annoying with our just being kind of like, we're kind of hit or miss, but not in a negative necessarily way. It's just, I don't really have that much feelings towards this, if I want to use that word.
Yeah, like, no, your strong emotions one way or the other. Literally, like, you know, the neutrals from Futurama, where they're just like, I have no strong feelings one way or the other.
Yeah, and there's a lot of competence, and so that competence, but not necessarily passion. I feel that a lot. Like, the people who are making this are not overly passionate about the material. And maybe that's unfair to Albert Kim. I don't know. Maybe he was super passionate, but it just, yeah. Well, maybe I'll just leave it there. But
that's fair. I won't say, like, at worst, it's the direction, like, and it's not even intentionally, but like, just maybe the guy does see, like, the director does probably seem like he's been in the industry for a long time. So I can't, like, throw him under the bus for that. But, like, I don't know, maybe it's just not the right tone that they set for it. I don't know. But I don't feel like it's offensive or anything like that. No, I think he did an excellent job with it.
Well, I don't know if I can go that far.
Okay, fair enough. But it's not like, yeah, the worst thing I've ever seen.
No. But if, for someone who comes from special effects, that makes it more jarring, just how poor some of this stuff is. But again, that's I'm sure they can't help it. I'm sure maybe they're saving up their budget for the big finale, but this one maybe feels like it was a little bit more ambitious than they could afford to do.
Yeah, no, remember when we used to say, like, oh, is this part of the story or is this filler?
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah. And I guess, yeah, this one, we'll see, because we do get Aang deciding to stay in Omashu. He does say that, even though at the end of the episode, it seems like he's, you know, going to be stuck there, not by his choice.
Yeah, part one.
But I was going to ask you, I don't know if you said your best thing or worst thing.
I will obviously say it, so don't worry. I'm not trying to avoid it. I'm just like, yeah, it's, yeah. It's okay. It just happened. Yeah, so definitely like very low feeling it, but very high not feeling it if I had to go with that.
Oh, no, that's confusing.
Just because we don't have a neutral. we don't have a neutral category, so we just have to accept what it is.
That's fair.
Best thing? Honestly, I think like the end bit fight with Aang and Zuko, where they don't do bending and they do a little bit like a Jackie Chan shtick.
Yeah,
I think it was pretty fun. I think it, like, I gotta give credit where it's due. I mean, when I say that, it was shot pretty well, and like, it's given me Jackie Chan energy, and I'd probably go sooner watch like one of his films than watch this. But I got at least, you know, show appreciation and like tip the hat to what they were doing. And it's like, I think both actors did, and any other stuntmen or women, I think did an excellent job with that scene. So yeah, high praise for me on that one.
Yeah, just to quickly comment, I really enjoyed the moment where just a random lady shows up and starts knocking away Zuko, and it's like, how dare you hit that child? I actually laughed at that.
Yeah, that was random. I was like, oh, hey, what the hey? That's definitely fair. What the hey was Momo and Appa in this? I think that's the other reason why they did an episode like this, because they're inside a city, and so they don't have to worry about like having Momo and Appa. So it's just like, oh, they're over in the woods. But we never got a line, I believe, from Aang saying that. So that's not the worst thing. I'm just pointing that out of like, oh, yeah. Whereas, doesn't matter. Even in the Lost Adventures, if you remember, there were times where we went into a town and, you know, Aang would just say, all right, guys, you got to, you know, stay over here before, and not, you know, get hidden or hide so you don't get like seen by people to give away our position. So it's like, yeah, they were always like doing that in the like original series and extended like series, I guess, or extended like canon. But, you know, again, that's not a nitpick or anything like that. They just didn't do that here. Worst thing. I think I had a worst thing before. When I say crowdedness, it's not so much like, it's not to say like I'm, again, angry with all the adaptations they're doing. It's just like, wow, this was packed.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember in the first episode, I did say I was kind of concerned when I saw the episode count in the beginning, because I was like, oh no, are they going to do a thing where they like combine two or three episodes into one, and it's going to feel like a little bit over dense and like they don't have time to breathe? And after the Warriors episode, I was like, oh, wow, they kind of gave us a whole expanded version of the Wars of Kyoshi. That's kind of interesting. Maybe they're just going to selectively pick episodes, but flesh them out more than you could in 22 minutes. And then we get to this and it's like, oh, there's what my worry was. Yeah, you just take a couple of concepts and you throw it all into one. And yeah, maybe it doesn't all fully come together right. So
definitely an interesting point to put like four episodes together into one. It's not four, I'm just like exaggerating there, but like it felt like four episodes together into one. I guess if I had a worst thing, I guess what they, again, don't worry, maybe I'm slightly, well, but that's just my personal opinion, so I don't know if that would count. I don't know if that holds any weight.
It's your best thing or worst thing, so it is your, you know, your personal opinion.
Yeah, but that just sounds like I'm rewriting the show. I don't know if that's fair or not. Because I actually do have something to say about, like, one of the title characters in this.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm not, yeah.
Maybe.
I don't know. I guess I'll just say it was crowded, but again, not for the sake of, it definitely felt like they could have let this episode breathe more. I feel like they should have had another episode to, like, again, deal with all the other characters in it. I'm not saying, I guess I can see the chaos of it, the chaotic nature. Let's get into it. I'll have a worst thing by the end. How about that? Let's talk about it.
Yeah, sure. Well, I guess just since you already mentioned that Appa and Momo are pretty much gone for this episode, I did appreciate in the previous episode we talked like, oh, you know, every now and again in that show, the original series, they would just in the corner of the frame, you'd see Momo doing something just kind of silly and it'd be so cute that we would have to call attention to it just because we enjoyed it so much. I did think it was kind of cute in this that we see Sokka and he's holding up a whole bunch of food. And Katara and Aang laugh because it's like Momo's copying him. He's got the food down there too. And I was like, okay, that feels in spirit of what I'm looking for. That's kind of a cute little thing there.
Yeah, no, it probably definitely is looking back to the series, and I can't deny, like, even if I don't feel moved by it, I can at least appreciate the fact that they are attempting to at least bring something back from that. I'm not saying it's, you know, nostalgia or anything like that, but at least to have the spirit in there. I can't in good faith write off this show for not trying to be authentic.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's how I feel about it too. It's not like I was super charmed, but I was just like, oh, I appreciate the attempt. I think that's nice to do. but I guess, what was your thoughts about our opening here? We get a little group of revolutionaries that, like, okay, we're gonna sneak in. We have our secret weapon. This new girl that we don't know, she's gonna help us get into the Fire Nation capital and take down that Ozai. And it turns out that our secret weapon is actually Ozai's secret weapon. As we get introduced to Azula, I was a little bit surprised by that. I did not necessarily expect to see her this early.
Well, you know, unless we looked at the cast listing and whatnot, that's neither here nor there. I was more happy that we had these people of the Fire Nation who no longer wish to have war. I was very pleased with that, especially given real world events, not to go there. I'm at least happy that not everybody in the Fire Nation is reciprocal to the actions and the direction that the leader is taking. So I much appreciated that more than Azula, because unfortunately she kind of felt like an afterthought to me. I was like, okay. I was more happy with the revolutionary stance, or at least the insurrection, excuse me, well, not insurrection, but just going against being anti-war. So I was more happy with that than it just being, oh, it's Azula.
That's fair. Yeah, I didn't put the focus on that element, but I should have, because we did discuss that a lot in the series, that we always enjoyed when they would be more nuanced. It wasn't just like, oh, this whole ethnic group is bad guys, which would be a more simplistic way to tell this kind of story.
And to be fair, unfortunately, that's another thing where they added something. We didn't exactly have that in the series. So,
well,
for once, the addition of it, I enjoyed.
Well, we got it more as it went along. But yeah, for a long time, it seemed like Iroh was the only one that was a little bit more in the middle. But otherwise, yeah.
Well, this is straight up like anti-war. Like they were actively seeking to kill Ozai.
Yeah.
Even if it was like a fool's errand, of course. Like it was, yeah, they were literally like, you know, it was futile in their efforts. But it's just like, I appreciate that not everybody agrees with this. So, and the show, and the original show never looked at that. So that's maybe like my second best thing about the episode.
Nice. And yeah, I agree with you that it definitely seems like, at least for this episode, that Azula was just kind of more being set up here more than anything else.
And yeah, let's like just quickly, because she's not at all like the folk. Well, I guess she is and she isn't. We see the Yuyun archers she's training with. Is she a non-bender? Or at least she at least doesn't appear to have showcased her bending just yet. But it almost seems like she's holding back. Like they're either telling us she wasn't or something. And there seems to be, a different relationship that's going on between the Royal Fire family.
Oh, interesting. Maybe expand on it. Maybe I don't know what you mean.
It was just the way that Ozai mentioned, like he handed her Zhao's letter. And something about him, like, see, I don't know if this is the same, well, it's not the same Ozai, of course, but it just seems like, I'm not saying he's looking up to some, but at least, you know, the revelation that we saw in the promise, or sorry, not the promise, the search, you know, how, like, a mean old son of a gun he was in that, ruthless. Like, I'm not saying that he's not a ruthless son of a gun here. I don't know, it's interesting how he does speak of his son, and almost like, not reverence, but maybe I'm misreading the, and yeah, I'm misinformed of how that. See, I just took it as like, wow, he's actually having like some sympathy for Zuko. This is never like the original show where he burned his face off.
Yes,
or half his face off. Sorry.
Yeah, and it wasn't until Zuko was able to earn his trust back that he would at least put up the show that he has it. So yeah. No, that is interesting. I didn't really think of that either. But yeah, you're right. That could lead to a different dynamic. And really, that's the one thing I wanted to highlight with. I was like, oh wow, them introducing Azula this early. We kind of commented in Sozin's comment that the last part, or maybe it was the second from last, where we're kind of like, wow, if only we could have gotten more time spent on the real insight, or the real inside of Azula as a character, not just the mask that she puts out. Because we got little hints every now and again in the series, but it wasn't really until the very end that we finally got to explore her character more. And so I was just thinking, like, oh, if they're introducing her this early, maybe they could spend more time fleshing out those dynamics with her throughout the run of it, rather than just kind of waiting until the very end. So that's a positive, I think, as well.
Yeah, and there's not much to her character here, and no, there is.
Yeah.
Again, with the archery, I mean, maybe that's just like the royal thing to do, where it's just like the royal, like the princess is basically to uphold and learn all these skills and whatnot. And maybe it makes sense, obviously, for her to be versed in a lot of arms and other like aspects of war to make herself, you know, more prepared. Maybe that's the reason. So by the end of the part, volume, whatever we're calling this. If we go to the Earth Kingdom next, and he's learning earthbending, hey, Aang, when are you going to learn waterbending? bringing that back. That's the Azula we see in Book 2. I'm not exactly sure. And yes, nice to see Ty Lee and May there.
Yep.
Nothing yet to know if May and Zuko are an item yet. I like her knife. Her knife looks pretty authentic to the show.
Yep. Yeah, something about her hair looked a little bit off. I once again got that feeling of like, this feels like slight cosplay in a way, just from her hair.
It will be interesting to see how this episode, it'll be interesting to see how they handle her fight scenes. I'm a little hesitant, I'll say that, but anyways. So I guess I like Ty Lee's actor, and she definitely has similar energy, but I guess more to a plausible and grounded sense than how much of an out there girl she was in the show. In a bad way, of course.
But yeah, no, I'm definitely a positive on them introducing her early. Again, we talked about so much in the search, how much we ended up really just feeling bad for her. Like, there was so much damage there that was hinted at in the regular series, but was expanded more in the very, very end of it. And it's like, oh, I wish we could have had more time to spend with her and have that sympathy with her. So maybe we'll get that here.
Especially since I guess she's sort of in being, by the end, where she's in league with Zhao.
Yeah, I kind of like that turn too. Yeah, I thought that was interesting and could definitely change up the dynamic as well. Because I'm sure she would have no respect for him. Even though she's working for him, she would still just be like, oh, you're like at the bottom of the rung for this army. Like, you're just a tool for me to throw away when I'm done with it. And another thing that I thought was interesting is when we were getting to Omashu, I kept waiting for like, oh, when are they going to give us a mention of Bumi? But then it turned out it was this supposed airbender that was at the draw there. So I was like, oh, wow, this feels definitely different in a way. But it kind of makes sense. I like them transposing this, the mechanist story into Omashu. It's such like a cool kind of technically advanced city, just in terms of how they've got it built. It would make sense, maybe it'd be a place for more intelligent inventions to be created.
Yeah, no, they took, they, yeah, you're right, they transposed or transplanted the Northern Air Temple into this. That's fair. It's kind of something that I think Shyamalan would have done in book two had he pursued a second movie or sequel to that first movie. Something like that. So it wasn't surprising, but oh man, we throw a ton of ingredients into this like melting pot or whatever, in this beef stew or whatever you want to call it, this really interesting stew. We got a little Azula on the side there. We've just got Zhao over here. Yep. Then we got Jet and his gang and the Mechanist and Tao. So it's like, wow, we got a whole bunch of people going on. And besides, we did see the Earth King at the end there, so I don't know if it's Boomy or not. We won't know. Maybe that's for that. But again, we haven't seen episode 4. It's still March 4th to victory. So here's something I never thought I'd say. So for romance, I don't know. Like in this one, I definitely see Katara and Aang as good pals, or however they put it in the Umber Island Players. Like just friends. Yeah. Maybe that is nothing on the actors, but maybe that also is like just the age gap, because Katara's actor does seem a little bit older than the Aang actor. Nothing on that. But I was actually kind of like, yeah, you know, I could definitely see the romance between Katara and Jet being a thing. Heck, if they wanted to make her and Zuko a thing, that's fine. I'm down. I don't know why. Like, maybe it's just a new thing. I don't really care.
Yeah, no, that I never thought about that. That is interesting. But I also agree. I thought they sold it a little bit better here, the dynamic that she had with Jet. In the other one, it was kind of just like, is she into Jet because she thinks he's hot? And he was kind of unlikable, a little bit like a smug jerk right away. Whereas this one, he seems more underground, and we see that he's helped all these kids. He's got like his own little like Lost Boys Island that he's the leader of. I could see why she would see that charisma in him and see him as someone worth following. And by the way, did you suspect it was Jet when they first meet him on the road into Omashu?
I had two guesses. Haru or Jet?
Yeah, me too.
And it was Jet. And nothing on Haru. I don't know if we'll get to him at all or if he'll ever be a thing. But Haru, I'm not saying wasn't confident, but Haru had, at least, you know, he was also like, you know, a small village guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wasn't proud or anything. I'm not saying proud, but Jet has a personality. Jet is definitely like, you know, a strong personality and is a go-getter. And not that Haru isn't, but there's definitely a difference between the two. It would be interesting for those two to interact. Now, I was kind of happy with seeing Jet, but I was also disappointed. And don't worry, I'm not a fan of Jet in the original series. So here I was actually going to give them the benefit of the doubt again. But I was kind of disappointed because I was like, I kind of wish that, this is what I was going to say, was I kind of wish that we hadn't revealed him as being like, you know, the freedom fighter, aka, you know, being a terrorist. I feel like I kind of wanted to like let him like go, like actually try. Again, this would be interesting if we brought Suki along and we brought all the freedom fighters and they all went to the North Pole. And then maybe some, like actually develop the characters and maybe have a sense of, this is just me like repeating stuff from Fast and the Furious last year when we did that. But man, I was like, oh, we could actually like have Jet maybe start not at the place where he's at. And then eventually like, no, he gets to that, like, you know, I'm by any means necessary, even if it means I have to hurt Earth Kingdom people.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea what you got, but I guess in terms of the utility, they show right at the front that this isn't just the Fire Nation or the baddies and the Earth Nation are automatically the good guys. Even among them, we have extremists that go too far and are willing to hurt their own people in order to further their cause. And with the Fire Nation, there's still people out there who are trying to take it down from within. So they try to show different sides of the war here and make it a little bit more complicated. And same with the Mechanist, too. That makes sense to filter him in there, someone who's only cares about him and his kid.
I'll get to him in a second. But for now, I just want to quickly comment on Zuko's little, you know, motion he made regarding when they finally get inside. Omoshu, and him and Uncle look at the destroyed building. And he's like, "What the hell was that?" And it's like they say, like Iroh was like, they say that us firebenders have resorted to terrorism, and even Zuko's appalled. He's like, "Why would they do that? That doesn't seem like us, or that just seems dishonorable that we would like go to such methods."
Oh, I'd almost forgot about another one of my favorite scenes in this episode, which I thought was a really interesting little wrinkle, is early on we see Zhao working with Iroh and Zuko in a very kind of unpleasant fashion. Zuko is just being a straight up like jerk to him.
Yep.
And Iroh tries to smooth it over. And then right when they're leaving, one of his lieutenants, the guy with the mutton chops, comes in, and Zuko's like, "Man, I can't stand that guy." And his underling tries to get in good with him. He's like, "Oh, you know, I've heard rumors about him that he's failed his officer's test a couple times." And immediately Zuko shuts him down and like kicks him out. And I was like, "Hey, like you didn't need to be so harsh to that guy. He was just trying to get in good with you." And Zuko's like, "No, we're the Fire Nation. Even out here, there has to be the order. And you can't just let someone get off slacking their superior officer. Like, especially out here, we need to keep that order." So I was like, "Oh, that is an interesting wrinkle for him. To see that he's trying so hard to maintain that Fire Nation image, even out here, even as a banished prince."
I do wonder if Zuko senses the ambition within Zhao, where he already can sense that there's betrayal on the horizon, or I understand why he doesn't want anybody to know about the plan, because it's only his mission, right? Like, he is after the Avatar, nobody else. So I guess maybe he senses that ambition with Zhao, but they're playing a secret, a cold war of like, all right, we know what's going on the surface, or beneath the surface, excuse me, in between the lines, but we're still going to keep up appearances and not state the outright obvious nature of each other's motivations.
Yeah, and it also could be just the elitism of Zuko, having grown up in, the palace around royal people, and there's no graces about Zhao that seem sophisticated in his way. I mean, he puts up good airs, but you can tell that he's not a noble type. So maybe that also would make Zuko kind of look down at him immediately. I don't know.
Again, very, very different than the Zhao from original series.
Yeah.
Making it clear if that's not a bad thing. Just like, wow.
Yeah, I kind of like it. I'm interested in that there.
I guess maybe one of my negatives I could say, and again this is petty, is like the freedom fighter scene. Like, it was cool they were introduced and all, but in the last episode I kind of mentioned this is where like we get maybe some once upon a time ish action scene or fight scenes, and I'm like, ugh. Like, where I'm just like, maybe with Pipsqueak I can believe it, but I don't know, just like the way they choreographed that fight scene, I was like, I'm not really too impressed.
Oh, wait, with the Freedom Fighters, do you mean the people at the beginning or like Jet's gang?
Oh, sorry, yeah, Jet's gang, my apologies. When Katara and Jet go through the forest and then we see, when we go through the forest and then we're introduced to all three. Yeah, they're chasing that firebender who's obviously in red, which, great way to make yourself stand out, buddy. or hide, be incognito by just wearing a red cloak. And then we get introduced to all the Freedom Fighters, and I'm like, okay, they're all like accurate looking, but the fight scene itself just I wasn't feeling that. So there's my like worst thing is that fight scene.
I felt the same way, and their whole scheme overall with the bombings and things. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was just something about the actors. They just didn't quite look like people who'd be scrappy enough and low down enough to be in this position. They kind of look like people who've been eating well for years and have been living regular lives and are playing these roles. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, we're, as we mentioned in Promise, of what that gang was really like, their real actions are, of course, where they just go from town to town and just join trouble without knowing what trouble they're actually getting into.
Yeah, it's almost like you need to have an eye for casting, not necessarily what looks like the characters in the show, but people who look like they've been through some hard times actually. And I just don't really see that with these kids, so it makes it not quite believable. Like, again, it almost gives it like a cosplay kind of feel, like, oh yeah, you got the aesthetic right, but the spirit of it doesn't quite feel like it's there.
Again, I one of the things I liked about Jet, I guess, and maybe I projected this too much, sorry, was the, maybe Jet was a deconstruction in the original show, and we were showcasing, like, these guys really aren't a threat. Like, he talks a lot of, like, big game in the original show, and he's really not making a difference whatsoever.
Yeah, they don't care who they're hurting that aren't related to the Fire Nation. It's just almost like an ego thing. Their own little personal vengeance that really in the long run isn't helpful. So yeah, I think it's a worthy inclusion to have in here. It's just maybe save it for not this episode. Maybe we have enough interesting stuff going on with the Mechanist and that own little wrinkle in the war and how self-interest can be damaging. I mean, maybe they're paralleling that with Jet and his gang, but I feel like it gets a little bit muddy.
Yeah, no, again, I actually was looking forward to Jet, because when he once he took his cloak off, and in that first scene of him with Katara fighting against those spies, I was like, yeah, I can sort of see it. Like,
yeah,
I was hoping that we would prevent, like, almost like I wanted him not to go down that road of freedom fighting, but he ended up doing it. I was like, oh, man, fair enough.
Yeah, and to be fair, I do think the actor is believable as Jet. I think he's good. I think he's carries that weight. It was more like Smeller Bee, and once we get to the gang, when it's all those kids hanging out in like their little base, those are all the ones where I just feel like, now these people have been living fine. They're not living in the woods, struggling in a war. They're just happy-go-lucky people. That's how they look to me.
Wanna be Lost Boys.
Yes, exactly. They... The other day they were working on, like, I don't know, some other like high school teenage show, and then they came and worked on this for a day. And
oh my goodness,
you can just see it.
Well, let's put a pin in any of that unless we're done with it, and let's get to the Mechanist.
Yeah, I'm good to move on from that. Yeah, these two, I especially Teo, like, I really hope when the Stone Temple Pilots, for anyone who doesn't know. Didn't listen to our book 3 coverage when Teo and that group joined the gang. We were calling them the Stone Temple Pilots.
Well, there's two of them already present, by the way, because Duke's there. We're just waiting for Haru. You're right. That'd be pretty sick if we could finally get the three of them together.
Yeah, if they can utilize him more, because I think that this kid has a lot of charm to him, and I think he bounces off the Aang actor very well. I can see some good chemistry there. And I even was feeling real bad for the Mechanist. Because this kid's so passionate about, like, oh, you know, we got to put it to those Fire Nation guys. We hate those guys. And he even made Aang feel kind of bad when he was like, oh, Aang, you know, you got to make them pay. And Aang looked all uncomfortable, like, oh, like, I don't really want to be the one to have to do that, but okay. And so, yeah, I thought that fire was burning well, and I was liking that. And it made me feel bad for the poor Mechanist who was behind closed doors betraying his son.
I will say that... At least with the, not addition, but at least with the setup of there being an airbender present in Amashu, turns out to be Teo, wouldn't that alleged information have been debunked years prior? Or is this like the first time he's gliding through the air?
Which information? Of like their...
So the information was Zhao found out from his... soldiers that there it was an airbender spotted at Omashu. The airbender, I believe, was Teo, not Aang. So my question is, would that information have already been, like, is this the first time Teo has ever flown before, or has he done multiple runs and nobody's just paid attention, like, okay, or the spies didn't notify them of, like, hey, there's a airbender here, maybe.
Well, I'd have two explanations for it, or at least two theories as to why it wouldn't be a problem. I mean, maybe, again, it was Teo had just recently started doing this. Or also before, maybe they weren't looking for airbenders because they thought that they were all dead. And so the fact that there was this rumors of someone flying in Omashu, no one really think too much of it. Maybe.
I thought it'd be something worth investigating. I was wrong.
Well, if they think they're all dead, maybe they'd just be like, you might just be making it up. You weren't actually seeing anything like that. But since now they know Aang's out there, they'd be hyper tracking down any rumors that they heard. Maybe Zuko would be hyper before, like, oh, I have to go check out any rumors. But the rest of the folks would just not really care, I would think.
But, I would think it'd be worth investigating, but just because they would want to silence those rumors and are also maybe, you know, take... I feel like they could also use Teo as leverage of just like, hey, the Fire Nation to the Mechanist, of course. He has a name. I forgot his name. How is it that he's able to fly around the air? And they kind of didn't really go into that, because I admit they sort of touched the surface of the whole like Mechanist thing. Like, again, as basic as it was in the show, I definitely like that aspect of they actually went into like the science behind how these things could work.
Yeah.
And it was so simple, but I did enjoy the time they took to like explain how Teo was able to, even if it was just through like, you know, visual storytelling of like he's using hot air to like keep with the updrafts and the air currents. So it's like, and even that extended scene of them flying together. But again, that was the show, not here.
Yeah. I wish that there was a little bit more of that in there, but I did like the little bits that we got with at least Sokka and him, the Mechanist, kind of going through his inventions. I thought that was pretty cool. And I guess, again, to highlight, because I keep pointing out that I just like this actor a lot, I think, in terms of him playing Sokka. I think he carries a good energy in that role. And the scene when he was explaining to the Mechanist, like, oh, yeah, I've always been interested in this stuff as a hobby, but, you know, my dad, he kind of looks down on it. And really, I'm just being trained to focus on being a warrior. The Mechanist is like, oh, you know, there's plenty of warriors out there, but your talent as an engineer, that's something that's really worth exploring for you. And you can see that means a lot to Sokka. So I appreciate that little bit there. Even if we don't really go too much into the Mechanist designs, we at least see that it's getting Sokka thinking.
He's starting. Yeah, I guess the actor is winning me over.
Nice.
Not that I was wanting them to fail. It's just like, yeah, maybe first episode I wasn't feeling it, but now I guess I am starting to slowly feel it. It's a meter. It's, you know, guys slowly go up.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, hey, Katara does a swish and flick technique. And honestly, just to do her waterbending, honestly, I'll give him this. I like the fact that it's maybe Aang was the like incorrect teacher, but I don't know why. I kind of like that Jet's the one to kind of give Katara the confidence at her bending.
I like that too. Yeah, it's almost like an advancement of their flirting too, that it boosted her confidence.
Especially coming from a non-bender to give her that confidence. That's pretty fascinating. I don't really think we've seen that before.
Yeah, and the aspect of her, we see it throughout the episode, her focusing on the scrolls, practicing her motions. There's even a scene in the Mechanist's office when we just pan over to her. And she's not even practicing with water. She's just doing the moves on her own.
That's cool.
And I was like, hey, look at that. They're focusing on actually learning this. But I didn't realize it was actually even a setup for how she discovers that the Mechanist is a bad guy. Because she's just out there practicing on her own. And just because she happens to be there is how she notices that he's doing some dealings with the Fire Nation. So I was like, hey, that was a quality setup too. It was advancing at the bending and a nice little piece of writing there.
Though, I guess this is also a transplanted and packed into this, you know, whole oversized and or like, you know, an overstuffed grocery bag full of goods from the supermarkets. The great divide just in that like disagreement between like the two sides of Sokka's with the Mechanist, Katara's with Jet. And they're both like, they're the bad guy.
Oh, I guess that is a little bit of the dynamic from The Great Divide. Yeah. Oh, boy. I think it plays a little bit better here.
Probably, but Aang's not even he's like, huh? I'm just with Teo. We just discovered, like, they're making blasting jelly.
Yeah. Yeah, which, again, we didn't get too many scenes of those two together, but I did think that part of the episode was working well as well. So, yeah, that's what's kind of weird is I feel like there's a lot of individual bits in this that were really working. It was just, by the end of it, there was just too much going on for me. And I was like, I wish they would have given the individual bits that I liked more room to breathe rather than just kind of pushing forward to get us to the ending that they want.
Uncle Iroh first interacts with a lotus tile, by the way. And then, not what I asked for last episode, where it's like, I can't wait to see how the actor, he sort of does it here, but it'll be interesting to see what happens when the actor gets to use force. Again, intentionally, of course, like for the story's sake, if Iroh has to use force, I won't count this as the end where he sacrifices or reveals himself to be the firebender and gives Zuko a chance to get out. But
you know, that was at least, I like the action of it and his decision to do that just to, again, protect his nephew. And I really do hope that this does change Zuko's mind over Iroh and Hao. I guess, you know what it is? It's son of a gun. It's the bit probably from the spirit world from episode 7, book 1, where instead of, in place of Uncle Iroh being in that hot spring naked, and then like captured by the earthbender, the Earth Kingdom soldier, excuse me.
Oh.
This time he's in Omashu. So they like, they put like six or seven episodes like into this one. Holy smokes. Well, I gotta at least admit, like, that's ambitious right there. I gotta at least, you know, tip my hat to that.
Yeah, and I will say, for as much as they do pack into this, it's nice that we still get those little smaller character moments in there. Because with how much they're going with, it'd be easy to just make it just plot, plot, plot. But they at least squeeze in some nice little character bits. And speaking of little small character bits, just in terms of a character that pops up in little bits, did you enjoy seeing the little reference to the Cabbage Man thrown in there a little bit?
Not really. I don't remember if I was trying to avoid that throughout the series. It's, you know, it's what turns the fandom on. So I'm kind of just like, I'll let it be for what it is. Like, it's there for people who found it funny.
Yeah.
The guy really looks like the design. I will say that. Yeah. The actor that they use, like, holy smokes, he's like a stand-in for the animated character.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, hey, that's, you know, even though, yeah, maybe that's a little bit overplayed. I'm in an Avatar group that, yeah, they love throwing those memes in there. I was still like, okay, that's an all right nod. And I think that they did just enough with it. I don't know if they needed to do any more, if we need to see him again. But if this is the only appearance, I think it would serve that group of fandom well. Yeah, and I've complained in the previous episodes, not necessarily complained, but just commented that they are definitely moving in a different direction with the use of humor. And we get a nice little gag from Aang. Again, it was not necessarily funny, but I just appreciate them trying to be funny. When Aang was saying, like, the monks always told me that I never listened to them. And then he's like, well, actually, I think they said that. You know, I never actually listened to them. I just thought the delivery of it was charming, if not necessarily, like, laugh-out-loud funny, if that makes sense. So I hope they lean into more of that as it goes along.
I was just trying to comprehend the joke of, like, over my head was like, what do you say exactly? The one that I was laughing at, I think, like, out loud, not me out loud, but definitely the one that I found funny, was the bit where, yeah, Katara and Sokka have that obvious disagreement. Felt very animated series, actually, surprisingly, with that. But they have the disagreements, like, I'm gonna go prove that you're not an idiot, and then Sokka's like, you don't need to prove that I'm an idiot or whatever it was. And he realizes this. I was like, okay, that was funny.
Yeah, I grinned at that one. I was like, okay, that's also getting back to what I'm looking for. That's nice to see.
I apologize. I butched the ever-living crap of that joke.
But I got what you meant. So yeah, again, that's why I felt kind of weird. When we were saying whether we were feeling it or not, I felt conflicted because, yeah, there's lots of little moments that I like quite a bit, but the overall episode was just, yeah, a little bit more of a mixed bag. So, but again, that's not to write off next episode. You know, maybe they're just setting all the groundwork. In the next episode, we'll be able to explore some of these little bits a little bit more. And hopefully that's what they're going to do. And I tend to think that I enjoy when this show, at least so far, strays away from kind of big action or too much going on. I think that's one of the reasons I didn't really like that the early parts of that first episode. So I enjoy the more personal kind of side of it.
Less is more. Less bending, more acting, and that's kind of what we want from it.
Oh, yeah, and I guess I liked also Katara finally managing to utilize the water whip to put out Longshot's fire arrow. And by the way, the actor that they chose for Longshot as well, I was like, okay, that spot on just in terms of looking like the character.
Couldn't agree more.
Pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Like, wow.
But yeah, I think that wraps up my notes for this one.
If I have any left to say, I'm good.
Yeah, and so I guess, yeah, for final summations, I think I even enjoyed talking it out with you a little bit more, fleshing out the details that maybe got buried because there was so much going on. I don't know, maybe on a second viewing, maybe I'd like this one a little bit more. I'm not sure. But I'm seeing some positives definitely for going forward.
Positives probably outweigh the negatives, but I will still at least stick to what I said in the beginning, where there is still a bit of neutrality for me, where I'm just like,
yeah,
I can't really, yeah, I like the ambition that they're trying to go for, but I guess there's stuff that I'm not feeling, but not, again, not in like a very like, this is the worst thing ever way.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, I guess tune in soon. We'll be continuing with the next episode. You'll see it on the feed relatively quickly. And yeah, hopefully you're enjoying the series and not just our coverage, but this in general. Again, I don't really know what the overall fandom's take is, but yeah, if you guys would like to let us know, you can shoot us an email or whatever, or give us a tweet on that platform that used to be called Twitter. I don't know what it's called these days. But take us home, Isaac. Carry us to Omashu.
Well, if it's Boomy we see next episode, that means Fopsy might return. But I think it's the wrong time of year to be in Omashu, given that, oh, there's a bad case that may outbreak or may not outbreak of purple pentapox.
Nice.
So get your vaccines ready. Get your N95 masks on again, because we may have a quarantine and a pandemic going on inside there. All the characters are about to get that next time. Till next time. Peace.
Yeah, I'm already starting to walk like an old man. Yeah, I've got that technique down.
I've been doing it for years.
Oh, that's great. Oh, I love that show.